This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Welcome to the Human Animal Connection Show, where we believe we can communicate with all animals. Join us as we explore the 33 principles and healing methods of the human-animal connection. As animal lovers, we know that you share our commitment to making the world a kinder place for all creatures. Together, let's embrace the transformative healing power of the human-animal connection.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Human-Animal Connection podcast. I am so looking forward to this episode. I've been really looking forward to speaking with Billy Groom because she has developed a really fascinating method of working with behavioral issues in dogs in an all-positive manner. And she works with the concept of cognitive behavioral therapy. So you may be familiar with that in the human realm, with changing perception of people's the way they're relating to the world, their maps of the world. I'm fascinated to find out how she uses that wonderful work with dogs. So Billy Groom has been in the dog business for over 3 decades. She has helped dogs from all different countries, all different rescues and shelters, as well as working with clients and dogs for, I think I said, over 30 years. So she's got a lot of experience to share with us today. Well, Billy, thank you for being on our show.
Thank you so much, Jeannie. It's so great to be here. I love what you do as well. I think it's wonderful.
Yeah, I think we are like-minded individuals. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We got to stick together, those of us who love animals.
There's a connection.
Yeah, those of us who love animals and want to do better by them. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. So let's start with you call yourself a dogologist. And what does that mean?
Well, it's interesting. Yeah, I guess because it's viewing dogs and working with dogs differently than just training. So it's understanding their whole being and their whole way of thinking. Yeah. How they and just being interested in them from a larger scale. So it wasn't as though I necessarily intended to be a trainer or a behaviorist. It was more that I wanted to understand why they were being euthanized and surrendered for behavioral reasons. And then that led on a path of understanding them on a larger scale. I only focused on dogs over 6 months of age. Not with the puppy training and that type of thing. And so I guess dogologist is a little bit like what a bartender would say is a mixologist. So You're not a bartender. You're just actually really interested in how things work together, creating new, innovative, taking what's there, what's working, really dissecting, deciphering. So I've worked with scientists and psychologists in the human realm to understand dogs. So taking a larger approach, I would say, that led to psychotherapeutic methods as opposed to conditioning methods, which work well as well.
Yes. Fascinating. Well, the difference between training and really establishing a true partnership or a true bond is, I think, the foundation of what you're talking about. So that's really exciting. And I know our listeners know that one of the leading causes of dogs being surrendered to the shelter are so-called behavioral issues. People can't handle it anymore. They don't know what to do. And they're at the wit's end and the dog goes back to shelter. And I know you've worked with many cases like this. So tell us a little bit. I mean, when I think of CBT, cognitive behavior therapy, I think of words. I think of, you know, changing language and changing, you know, using words to change perception. How does cognitive behavioral therapy work with dogs?
That's a really good point. It is considered talk therapy. It is a psychotherapy. So there's a number of psychotherapeutic approaches. I just find with cognitive behavioral therapy, and in fact, I should say, which is an interesting point, is I developed this method from working with dogs and created it. And then, like I said, worked with psychologists. It was only later in my career that I was told from professionals in the human psychology realm, particularly with children, that my method adheres to the principles of CBT. It wasn't as though I studied CBT and then tweaked it to apply it to dogs. Mm. It's a very interesting. So then I had to, that was sort of this aha moment. I started really studying CBT and aligning it more methodically with my method. And yes, it is talk therapy, which we can do with dogs. But what's happening with the talk therapy is it is allowing the subject, whether that be human or any species, to reset their brain, reset the way that they perceive their surroundings. Now, this doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to change their perception of liking or disliking a subject that's causing a behavior. So that's more along the lines of counter conditioning, which is a very good method as well. Counter conditioning aims to change the perception of the subject. So mm-hmm. if they don't like a big man with a baseball cap or something, just say, mm-hmm. then the goal of that is to get them to think, oh, okay, maybe I do like big men with baseball caps. CBT is more to change, really have to necessarily like him, but I don't need to feel fear or anger, or I don't need to react.
Right.
What can I do instead? We don't provide choices. We induce decision making. So once they start processing and recognize, it's the same with humans. And there's different ways of doing that. Now with humans, maybe they might journal to really write down why they feel. Can dogs journal? No, but they can process. And once we start inducing processing in different ways, not necessarily the big man with the baseball cap, but just inducing, things maybe not going as exactly how we think they should in different situations. Maybe that's not what I expected, or maybe that's out of routine, and being comfortable with that and making decisions that are okay and allow us to be okay with that. Then we can start to take those to more challenging situations. So it's more of a setting of the brain.
Yeah. So it's almost like you're creating a little bit more of a foundation of safety so the dog doesn't have to be on autopilot in their reactions.
Autopilot's a great word. We use that a lot because when dogs are on autopilot, they tend to do the quote unquote right behavior. There's really no right or wrong behavior with CBT. That's why we never use reinforcements, and there's never any negativity in the reinforcement at all. There's no right or wrong behavior. It's just simply how we feel and how we perceive. When we're on autopilot, we do things people don't notice when we make decisions that are good and positive. Mm-hmm. But when we're on autopilot and we instantaneously react or go into fear, or our brain just soars and just reacts, people do notice. So what we want to do is exactly what you said, is work on the brain not going into autopilot and being okay with that in other situations. Mm-hmm. So that's why it's very dependent on the individual dog and the person working with the dog and the setup and the lifestyle. The methodology, the principles remain the same. How it's applied is really dependent on the individual, which mm-hmm. is really cool. That's actually the fun part.
Right, that it isn't one size fits all.
No, and you kind of, it's really creative and really, it allows for a lot of creativity and dissecting into, okay, let's do this, or let's take what worked there and apply it there. Mm-hmm. What's the brain thinking? Why is the dog doing that behavior? Not based on something like an upbringing, but right in that moment, is it learned behavior? Is it a habit? Is it auto, as you said? Is it lack of processing, too much processing? Mm-hmm. You know, why? And then mm-hmm. sort of really creating the ability exercises. It's exercise driven, and those exercises mm-hmm. are words. Mm-hmm. So you do get the talk therapy because the words reset the brain and allow for that processing and decision making. And mm-hmm. how that's done is just so creative.
That's great.
It's really interesting to see people really bond differently with their dog and really understand and see this cognition happening and see the dog processing and making different decisions, and they start to see their dog differently. Mm-hmm. They start to say, oh, okay, yeah, that was a cognitive. So cognition and emotions is what I've studied a lot. I took a PhD course at Swedish University of Agricultural Sciences, and it wasn't dog only, it was all sorts of animals. But it's such an interesting realm mm-hmm. because you see them make decisions based on their emotions and their cognitive abilities.
Yeah. So when we see behavior, rather than looking at it as good or bad, we should understand that that's an emotion that's driving the behavior. And it's, in a sense, the best decision the animal can make in that moment based upon that's the emotion they're feeling, right?
That's exactly it.
Do you feel that, like, our latest rescue, wonderful, wonderful dog, and he's passed his therapy dog test. He's just extraordinary working with kids and with 911 operators and all this great stuff. So he's fabulous. But when I leave the house, he gets into anything and everything, you know, mostly after food, but, you know, he's chewed up scissors, he's, you know, gone on counters, you know, gotten bread out of the bread box, ate a whole loaf of bread the other day, you know, when I'm gone. Doesn't do this behavior when I'm home. Does he know the difference between, is it a right or wrong that he knows and just enjoys it? Or what would you say about that situation?
That is so interesting. One thing that pops into my mind is it's so interesting when people see dogs in public. Oh, I want my dog to be like that. Often the dog is like that in public because they're doing exactly what they want to do. They're with their human doing fun things. But then when they leave the dog at home. So just like with people, they're not perfect all the time everywhere. Some dogs are. Mm-hmm. But that is more common than people think. But yes, you're right. We would have to determine, is this dog doing this to make a point? Maybe mm-hmm. the dog has FOMO, not so much anxiety, but mm-hmm. just wants to go because he feels you're going somewhere fun because it wouldn't occur to him that you're going food shopping or, you know, or to yeah. do a chore or to work, you know, right, something right. like that. So sometimes they just think everywhere you go is fun and good. So why am I not going?
Right.
And so it's more of FOMO. And sometimes it obviously is anxiety. And so we would, and sometimes the people don't know, we're not sure. But once we start working together and developing some exercises and allow for decision making, and all this is done while the person's at home, you don't mm-hmm. have to leave and come back and leave and come back and repetition on that. We're building these exercises that allow the dog to realize you, for example, if the dog thought that you forgot him mm-hmm. and that going somewhere that he should go and you forgot him, then mm-hmm. we're working on his perception of you being aware of where he is and what you're doing and being part of that process. So those exercises induce that processing instead of just going into panic mode. She's putting on their shoes. She's brushing mm-hmm. her teeth. She's getting mm-hmm. her lunch into the fridge. She's picking up that purse and their brain is just going into that hyper state. We bring it down before it even goes up there and they can process mm-hmm. that all that can occur and you're well aware that the dog is there. So that would be an example of if the dog thinks you just forgot them. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they're just doing it out of brattiness.
Yeah.
Sometimes yeah. it's well, maybe if I rip this apart, they won't leave again. Uh-huh. Well, that, you know, you can't just keep leaving and coming back because then you get caught in that funk. So we literally have to change perception of the person, mm-hmm. of that person being able to do things that maybe they don't like so much, or maybe not what they expected. Those are done completely, those exercises, not at all when you're leaving. Those exercises are done completely at other times. That's what separates it a little bit from conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Whereas CBT practices brain and emotion changing totally at other times.
Uh-huh. Yeah, fascinating. Okay. So not just flood them with the experience or get them used to it.
No.
None of that. None of that.
No, none of that.
I read this book once. I forgot the author's name, but she had an African gray parrot. And sometimes she would, you know, when she wasn't there, the bird would do things that were wrong, you know, the bad stuff around the house. And she had a recording of the bird, and the bird was saying, as he was doing the bad stuff, the bird was going, bad birdie, bad birdie, bad birdie, and continuing to enjoy doing, you know, tearing up something, whatever. I thought that was such a wonderful story, you know, that the bird understood this
they
is bad. I like it, but you know,
yeah, probably because the person came in and went bad birdie,
yes, right,
and they
right.
know that they're bad. So mm-hmm. it's interesting. It really is important to, because we would pick different exercises, and we also, if the dog simply doesn't know right from wrong and doesn't want to do wrong behavior, you would use conditioning, mm-hmm. Positive reinforcement to mm-hmm. training. But if it's more based on knowing right from wrong or coming from an emotion or cognitive skills, then you would implement different exercises depending on the reason for the behavior. So it's so important to really understand where that where the dog is coming from, just like with people. Mm-hmm. Everybody wants to be understood.
Everybody wants to be understood. That is absolutely true. And speaking of which, are you? Do you consider yourself an animal communicator? Do you communicate telepathically with animals?
Yeah. Not professionally, no.
Okay.
No, CBT isn't animal communication, but I have a lot of clients and work with a lot of who have used animal communicators. I think they're great. Often what we say balances and well with each other. It really provides that person with an overall. Mm-hmm. But no, CBT is an actual, canine CBT as well, is an actual methodology for working through it. Mm-hmm. But often what an animal communicator will provide some substance, you know,
insight,
works as a whole insight.
Insight into, okay, well, good. Well, we're going to take a short little break, but when we come back, I'm hoping you'll tell us some wonderful stories of behaviors that maybe were mysterious to the person that you were able to resolve through these methods.
Sure. Thank you.
All right. We'll be back in just a moment. Don't go anywhere.
Take a bite out of your competition. Advertise your business with an ad in Pet Life Radio podcasts and radio shows. There is no other pet-related media that is as large and reaches more pet parents and pet lovers than Pet Life Radio. With over 7 million monthly listeners, Pet Life Radio podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. And our live radio stream goes out to over 250 million subscribers on iHeartRadio, Odyssey, TuneIn, and other streaming apps. For more information on how you can advertise on the number one pet podcast and radio network, visit PetLifeRadio.com/advertise today.
Hey friends, if you like what you're hearing and want to learn more, check out Dr. Joseph's book, The Human-Animal Connection, Deepening Relationships with Animals and Ourselves. Or visit the website, thehumananimalconnection.org, to book an online consultation. Thank you for loving animals. Now back to the show.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to the Human Animal Connection Podcast. I'm Jeannie Joseph, and I'm speaking with Billy Groom, PhD. So tell us some stories about maybe some clients who had some behaviors that their dogs were doing that were mysterious or challenging or not obvious, and how you helped them work through that.
I think a big thing with people is when their dog has a change in behavior. Mm-hmm. So they've always liked dogs, or they've always liked people, or they've, you know, and then they just suddenly don't, or they have it really is challenging for people and they don't know what to do. And it can be very scary. Mm-hmm. So for example, they've just, you know, the dog is always like going to the off-leash dog park or to dog daycare and then suddenly doesn't. Mm-hmm. So I think that the goal that we need to take there, the approach that we take is to find out is the dog just growing up and maybe not liking that activity anymore, like people do? Mm-hmm. I don't enjoy going to the same public drinking establishments that I do now at almost 60 that I did when I was 20. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it could be, you know, one thing that is definite, which is not my area of expertise, you know, go to the veterinarian, see if it's a physical. Mm-hmm. But let's assume that it's not. So something like that, where the dog just doesn't, so we would be able to learn whether they apply exercises that allow the dog to tell us whether they just don't want to go to those places anymore or whether something happened there. And then also have that open mind of if the dog wants to be in those places and does want to go, great. We're not just going to avoid it and say, oh, your dog doesn't want to go in. Maybe they do. Maybe there's just something that's happening at the dog park. And we would apply these exercises that allow them to read their dog better. Reading a dog is a big thing. Mm-hmm. It's reading and learning about the dog. And then from there, we can apply exercises that help that dog make different decisions. They could be something even tiny. I remember a client years and years ago. Her dog was always good in the home and just always very relaxed and suddenly was just very stressed and panting, pacing. And so we did some exercises And every time we did these exercises and we induced decision making, the dog would go under the dining room table. And so we talked about that, and she had had an area rug under the dining room table. And she'd taken that area rug out to get either cleaned or repaired or something. It was a special area rug from somewhere. So it took a while for that to get done.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want, you know, is it that? Because the dog was telling us that. And it wasn't through communication. It was through exercises, CBT, with decision making.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, yes, she had taken the area rug away. So we did exercises, and we didn't wait for the area rug to come back because it was going to be a fairly lengthy time frame for that to happen. So we did exercises that decreased anxiety with change mm-hmm. in other situations, and then that helped with that. So the anxiety, that took about, I think that took 4 days. Once we started to apply those exercises that were specific for change,
mm-hmm.
Then the dog was fine.
That's great.
So it could be something very small.
Yeah.
And when people think of change, they commonly think of routine in their routine, you know, are they leaving for work at a different time? It could be something very small.
Mm-hmm.
Dogs might change their eating habits.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Interesting.
You know, things like that.
Now, can you tell me more about a dog's decision-making process? Because it seems like that's a big part of what you're working with. So tell us about that process for dogs.
Right. So we establish verbal driven exercises that induce processing and decision making. When a dog makes a decision, it's a difference between choice and option. So you'll hear a lot in the industry, people will talk about, you know, we let a dog walk one way or the other, decide which way they're going to walk.
Mm-hmm.
You know, choices of a blue toy or a red toy, or if they want to eat in a certain place or eat in another place. Decision making is different because we create a verbal indicator that the dog can make a decision, but there's no choice that we provide. They can do multiple different things.
Mm-hmm.
It's not based on a choice or an option, and there's no right or wrong. The goal of that decision-making is often for us to learn what the dog is thinking, because people will commonly say, I'm not sure if my dog likes or dislikes dogs. I'm not sure why my dog is doing a behavior or what he's thinking. So we're not doing canine enrichment in the sense of providing positive options or choices. Once we induce processing, we can then allow for that decision-making. That decision-making may not be what we like, quote-unquote, mm-hmm. but it allows us to learn a lot about the dog. And then we can really funnel those exercises down
mm-hmm.
to address
yeah.
where the dog's mental, emotional block or challenges are.
Mm-hmm. So how would you define a decision then? You give us an example of choice, the red ball or blue ball, but what is the decision? What would be an example of a decision?
So if we're not sure, for example, if a dog likes or dislikes dogs, but we know that they react, but we're not sure if they like or dislike, we would establish exercises in other areas that induce processing and decision, just around the home, that type of thing. Decision-making being, we would just do different things and they can thus react differently, but there's really nothing that they can do wrong. It's in a positive environment. It's in a positive, maybe a routine, like a feeding routine or a walking preparation routine, something that they like and they do. Then when we would take those exercises and that ability to stop and process and be okay with things being different, we might go to somewhere that it is safe and we're not focusing on correcting the reactivity.
Mm-hmm.
When apply those same exercises that allow for processing and decision making, when that happens, and people can't envision this, they're always like, Billy, no, you don't understand, my dog's going to react when he sees a dog, he's just going to go. But it's interesting, sometimes they walk toward the dog, sometimes they walk away.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they stand there and continue processing.
Yes.
Sometimes they go and sniff a tree.
Mm-hmm.
There's no wrong that they can do. Sometimes they do react.
Yeah.
And we have to go back to the drawing board and maybe do some more exercises that allow for greater processing so that that reaction isn't the dog doesn't feel the need to do that reaction. But if the dog decides to walk toward the dog and is expressing an interest or continuing to process, we're going to take a different route than if the dog looks at the dog and then on that verbal decision-making cue decides, I'm just going to walk over here, or I'm going to go sniff a tree. We're going to take a different route than if the dog had expressed an interest in the dog. Now we're going a different direction, but we don't pre-decide that.
Right.
Which is a bit challenging because, well, I want my dog to like dogs. Well, we can't always make people like everybody. Mm-hmm. We can't make people. So once dogs realize that they're not being told whether they have to like or like a dog or like a person, they're just being allowed to make that decision on what they want to do. And that's okay. It's like someone going to a dinner party. You don't have to like everybody there. You can leave if you want to leave. You can avoid the people you don't like. You can spend time talking to different people or doing different things. And then once you realize that and that you have that ability to make those decisions, those choices aren't put in front of you. No one said to you, you can go either to the food table or you can talk to this person or you can go. No one's giving. You're making those on your own.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing that CBT does is we start to see intrinsic rewards, which is different. There's no other method in conditioning methods don't rely on intrinsic rewards. And the interesting thing about intrinsic rewards is we can't create those. Those happen inherently.
Right.
Same with people. Yes. It's just a feeling in your brain, your mm-hmm. emotions, your physical, your emotions, like that feeling of not being afraid, not having to react, not having to feel fear or anxiety. And then once that's repeated and that feeling is repeated and you don't feel the need to reach for a cigarette or to panic or to feel fear when something happens, you start to do it more and it becomes an intrinsic reward. We do start to see this in dogs, which is something that's very innovative and new in the industry.
Very exciting. And yeah.
Only reach that with a psychotherapeutic method.
So I think in a lot of ways, what you're talking about, this gives a dog a sense of autonomy when they can make their own decisions. And yes. That's, of course, the one thing they don't have in a shelter environment. And God bless shelters for saving dogs. But I'm just saying that dogs, all of their choices are taken away from them. All of the opportunities to choose when they eat, sleep, poop, whatever, interact. You know, they can't get away from the scents. They can't get away from the noise. They have no choices. They can't make any decisions that make their life better. And that can result in a high degree of stress and even trauma, you know, in certain dogs. So,
Which is why you know, they are trying to incorporate enrichment mm-hmm. and some choices, which is good. But again, it's a different feeling in the brain of actually having autonomy. You're right. And agency.
Yeah. Which is, I guess, you know, all beings want to be able to feel that they can make decisions, choices that have positive impacts on their life. That feel good.
And that people that they care about, or beings or species that they care about, understand what they're feeling and thinking. Yes. And so our decision and our direction isn't based on right and wrong behavior or completing a task or this is what, which is, again, it's challenging for people. It's, you know, no, Billy, we want our dog to not bark. No, you want your dog to not feel the need to bark.
Beautiful distinction. Yeah, that's excellent. Well, how do you work with people? How can they get a hold of you?
Well, I actually have moved forward to opening with my team, which consists of scientists and veterinarians and psychologists and people that are extremely good at their profession. It's the Institute of Canine Psychotherapy. And so that offers courses, some for pet parents, a lot for professionals in the industry,
mm-hmm.
so that more professionals can learn multiple psychotherapeutic methods. But there's also some really interesting courses in there on brain development, in particular with the adolescent stage, molecular development, provided by scientists who are experts in that field. Pet parents can take it, but what's also going to happen is that the professionals that take these courses will be very highly skilled and prepared to work with the pet parents.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And a lot of people, maybe they got a puppy and at about age two and the problems show up and they can't fix them and off they go to the shelter. You'll see a lot of shelter dogs that all the kennel cards say two.
That's an interesting point. Adolescence actually starts at around 6 to 8 months. So a lot of it, that brain development in adolescence is 6 to 8 months to 2 years. Mm-hmm. The reason there's a lot of 2-year-olds in the shelter is because people kind of tolerate it and try different things and try different conditioning methods. So canine cognitive behavioral therapy has prevented a lot of adolescent dogs, thousands, tens of thousands, from going into shelters, which is, so the shelters don't even see the dogs. They don't see those stats. And same with the rescue. They don't have those because the dogs never went there, which is great. But then what happens is sometimes the dog is home during that adolescent stage and brought back or still there at 2 years old. And then what happens is as that brain develops at 2 years old, sometimes those, some of the problems dissipate, or more so they don't dissipate on their own without some amount of help and addressing. But some of the other methods can also, with the brain development can click in. So you start to get just a different brain development at two once again. So that's why sometimes it's that age two, because they've sort of been adopted, brought back, or kind of, maybe surrendered for the first time at around 20 months when the people think, nothing works. So it'd be great if there were more professionals in whatever level, not just trainers, but professionals in the industry and people who have an impact, have this interest in other psychotherapeutic methods that are non-harmful, and it would really make a difference. So that's what ICP, Institute of Canine Psychotherapy, is doing, and it's great. The interest is phenomenal.
Great. Well, Billy, I'm so happy that you're doing this wonderful work. Thank you for saving so many dogs from shelters and for educating the public about what can be done when these situations that may be confusing and baffling to them. So thank you.
Thank you so much, Jeannie. I really appreciate this opportunity to connect with you and to share and to connect with your listeners.
Yeah, I know we'll be doing many more things together, so I look forward to that collaboration.
Yes, you are actually doing a webinar on ICP, so I'm excited about that.
Yes,
so
we're going to be talking
about it. We're super excited about it.
Yeah, we're talking about wholesome canine cuisine, because diet does factor into behavior, and so it's one of the factors that can help support dogs feeling better and acting better.
Yes, and also on therapy dogs.
Yes, exactly. Oh, yes, right. On therapy dogs. I forgot
first.
What we were doing for a second.
I'm sorry,
I got confused.
No, that's okay, because we're going to do the nutrition one as well, because they're both so important and everything works together as a whole. So that's wonderful. Yeah, we look forward to that.
All right. Well, thank you, Billy Groom. We'll see you soon.
Thanks, Jeannie. Bye-bye.
Thank you for being a part of the Human Animal Connection. We'll see you in the next episode. We'll say aloha for now.
Thank you for tuning in to the Human Animal Connection Show. Please visit our website, thehumananimalconnection.org. There you can sign up for our free email newsletter, book a consultation, or check out our blogs and resources. Our best-selling book, The Human Animal Connection, is available on Amazon. And your donation of any amount keeps our nonprofit organization providing life-changing services.
Let's Talk Pets. Every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.